Thank you. I can't thank everybody enough for such a great day. It's just been amazing so far. And now we're coming in and like, this is just great. I love this stuff. 10 and 11 is just amazing. You know, and we have an amazing, extremely passionate, wonderful person doing 10 and 11 today. But before she gets the opportunity to come up, we're going to have Peter come up and say a few words to her.
It's hot, I'm tired, things happen. My name is Peter, recovered alcoholic. And yesterday, Marion made 27 years by the grace of God. And she had a belly button birthday the day before, and 11-10 being her birthday, and 11-11 being her new day back to life. And so the group has been kind enough to allow us to present a coin and an absolutely gorgeous cake. So we've been able to do lots of now workshops together on the road, and we've got to visit Europe a few times and do this, things like this, and come up here sometimes on a Friday night when I'm not on the road, and Danny's just knocking it out of the park with his group. And I guess what I'm trying to say is I get to do this journey with this amazing woman. And someone I really don't deserve, but God saw fit to kind of complete the circle for me. And I've said this a few times, I'm a better man since I met Marion. I'm a better AA member since I met Marion. I'm a better Catholic since I met Marion. And my life is so much better because of Marion. And so happy anniversary, and thank you for doing this with me.
That is not a Pacific Northwest cake. It's official. I'm a Floridian. I love it. Oh, thank you so much. Thank you, Peter. I was saying this the other night at Mike Chase's meeting that, you know, if you're new to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and, you know, and you're looking for love in all the wrong places or whatever it is, you know, please, please don't sell yourself short and have someone that celebrates you. And there was definitely a long time and a long place that I wasn't celebrated, and I was kept down. And you know, and are we recording right now? Is this, yes. Is it happening? Oh, okay. Okay. And, but just in that, and you know, I'm a survivor of domestic violence, and that's, you know, something that's just, God's just saying, talk about it now more freely. And it's, you know, our book, Big Book, talks so much about no matter how far down the scale we've come, we can see where our experiences can benefit others. And if there's one woman in the room that has had and lived that experience, please know that you can get out and you can get free and you have a life bigger than you ever could have imagined, because there were days where certainly I didn't know I survived, would survive. And, you know, it's like, even I was 15 years sober when God released me from that marriage. I had lots of counseling, a beautiful, beautiful therapist that built me up strong enough to leave, and many great people around me. And, you know, and it was so crazy. And how does this fit into step 10 and 11? It really does, because I was a And this is, you know, God has brought so many things full circle. I was a worship leader in a Pentecostal church for many years. And behind those steeples and behind all the pomp and circumstance, my life was miserable. And I'd go up on stage and I'd sing and I'd go home and I'd be terrorized. And on the way there, I'd be terrorized. And on August 8th, 2004, I had my last fight, but I went to an AA meeting. I went to my home group of 20 years. I talked to my beautiful friend Hugh, who is gay and one of my dearest friends, and I said, I'm going home to have one more fight. And I don't know where I got that knowledge from. I absolutely know where I got that knowledge from. I knew that, you know, God was setting me and releasing me from that place. I know that today. And that day I was set free. But who, you know, the whole church thing came full circle. You know, they said, we can't do anything for you. That's not our job. The church's job is to repair marriages. And we can't help you. And the church had turned their back on me, and I was by myself. But who held me? Who held me through that was my Alcoholics Anonymous. Was the women in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Was my brothers in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And at 15 years sober, I was found in this very desperate place with God. I left with the clothes on my back, my guitar, of course, and one suitcase that I had packed, and some AAs helped get me on my feet, and I got into this apartment, and I sat there. And it was me and God and my guitar. That might not mean much to you, but to me that means a lot. And I can tell you that when you can find God in that desperate place, in that lonely place, I love what Russell was talking about today, and I'm going to try to quote it, but I think I'll rip it apart. You know, I want to be with the people who have done this under fire. I want to be with the people that have, you know, trampled lions and cleared the brush and have sweat on their brow and blood on their cheek and are like, yeah, we did it. We did it, you know. And my Alcoholics Anonymous got around me, and I called. I left the home that day, and I was in my Jeep. Where's Nicoletta? She's not here. I was in my Jeep, and I was ripping down the road, and these AA ladies were having an AA tea party, which meant there was no tea, which meant they had coffee and they had a lot of cigarettes. And I called them and I said, I'm out. I'm gone. I left. And they were like, good, come to the party, you know? And I said, no, I really, really left. And they just start screaming, yay, she finally left the SOB, you know, and all these women are clamoring. And we went and cleared out checking accounts, and they hid me in the house. And, you know, and they just loved me back to life, you know, and they loved me back to life. And, you know, at 15 years, you would think, why would she not leave? And I know this isn't a domestic violence talk. This is part of my story, you know, and part of my yet another bottom in my sobriety that helped. Because what I did, so the, how this goes with step 11, what I did is I started getting a little backwards. I'm going to this beautiful church, and I'm marrying the worship leader. I'm traveling, and I'm singing, and I'm doing all these things. And I have this, what I'm thinking is this amazing relationship with God. And what I did was I got it flipped. And I would come to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I would look at you poor sinners. That's where I was. There was arrogance. There was pride. And I would go, well, as soon as I get it my way, you know, I still love Alcoholics Anonymous, but I was coming in and I was going to meetings and I was full of contempt prior to investigation. I was full of pride. I was full of ego. Now that I know this, looking back and more work being revealed. And it got me to a place of I never, ever, ever, you know, our big book talks about in addition to, never instead of. And I'm an example of that. And how AA put me right back on my feet, and it was back to the rotten cups of coffee and the crazy church basements and the squeaky chairs and, you know, the 13 steppers and all the freaking messy beauty of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can tell you that time and time and time and time again, Alcoholics Anonymous has pulled through and saved my life. You know, I feel like I'm kind of like a cat. I've got like all these different stories in my life and different bottoms I've hit, whether it's an emotional bottom, a spiritual bottom. But just, you know, even, my God, there's so much to say right now. Go God. But, you know, even a year ago, you know, Peter and I were in depths of really some really, really hard times in recovery in our jobs and in a place. And we would get home and we'd put the key in the door and we'd go to the house and just collapse because we were exhausted emotionally, physically, and spiritually. And what I can tell you and what I do know is God is everywhere. God is everywhere we are. And if you keep looking to him, the Father of Lights, our big book talks about, our Heavenly Father, like Dr. Bob says, your Heavenly Father will never, ever let you down. And he's never let me down. And I can tell you, stuff's been added, stuff's been subtracted. And in that place, what I know, and even in that relationship, and I'll go back to that a second, guys, Peter's not my higher power. You know, he's not. It's God. It's God. And what I do know why that relationship works is because God is his, and I'm not his God. So I think that's a little bit for the newcomer. I know that that's a little bit for the newcomer. And, breathe. So I want to thank my friends Danny and Susan for this beautiful event and asking me to be a part of it, to be the girl in the middle. And that's kind of cool, with some of my Florida AA heroes, the people that have helped, you know, bring me back to life. Because when I got here, 2012, 11, you know, I was pretty messed up. Another bottom in AA, but that's okay. God was there through it all. And you know, Danny and Susan have just, you know, wrapped their loving arms around us. They were, you know, in the midst of a year ago when we were going through all that stuff. Our Friday night road trip up here saved us. You know, because we're in the treatment center business, so everywhere we go, there would be clients, and there'd be another drama, and that's the way it is. God bless it all. But, you know, we just wanted a meeting. We just wanted a meeting, and we just wanted to be Pete and Marion and you guys and some fellowship afterwards. And we had way too many biscuits at Cracker Barrel, and, you know, and we're out way too late, and, you know, but it was worth the drive because we could just come up through the countryside, what it takes to get up here. And it's so beautiful up here, and you know, it would feed our spirits. And so it's beautiful. And I do want to say about that church, what was really amazing is it did come full circle. And by pressing into God and by having a relationship with God, we tend to be able to get to hear what God has to say to us. Oh boy, am I going to butcher this name. Our Southern friend who is? Fitz Mayo. Fitz Mayo, I love it. In Fitz Mayo's story, he talks about God and that when we start hearing God, that it's a thought with a voice. And I love that line, that it's a thought with a voice. We can have all, we're alcoholics. We have thousands of thoughts going through our head all day long. Come on. You've got to notice that I've got a little bulge here on the sides. I've got, you know, whatever. You know, our thoughts are just running through all day, every day. And then all of a sudden there's this thought that just hooks us, like Peter talks about. And I was being in the back row of this great big church, and I got to go in. I'm still going to go into church. I'm going in. And this place called Christ the King Church in Bellingham, Washington. And I'm going into that back row. And one day I was leaving the church, and I was coming down the Guide Meridian. That's for all those Bellingham people that are listening. like maybe one. no, I'm just teasing. I don't know what I'm saying. So anyway, I'm driving down the road and I'm going past my old church. And the thought with a voice comes to me, go in there. The next thought that comes to me was, you can't go in there. The next thought that comes to me is, you can go anywhere. And I did, and I walked in that door. And at the end of the service, the pastor called me to the front. And he made an apology to me on his knees. We sat on the floor and we wept. And I'm so, and told me how sorry he was for turning his back on me. And that doesn't mean I was right, doesn't mean he was wrong. And in that season, there must have been maybe a year that passed. I don't know how long it was, but there was reconciliation. And when that thought comes and when those we hear stuff like that, we need to pay attention to it. And I'm grateful I paid attention to that because, you know, the church is everything to me today. Along with never instead of, you know? And so I'm grateful. I feel like I'm well-rounded today in that. Not perfect in any stretch of the imagination, but I try. And so I did not say that my sober date is November 11th, 1989. Yesterday was 27 years sober. And Robert, thank you so much for your talk last night. And it felt like it was a history lesson, you know, and it was just so beautiful. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Coming in last night to the meeting, that's kind of saved me and Peter through a real tough time, you know, and getting to hear, you know, a good old timer. Oh, I love it. And, you know, and all the people that have mentored your life. And you know, you've just been such a, if you haven't seen Robert, you know, he's the guy in the Hawaiian shirt in the back of the room. I mean, this guy has got like the best eyes. He's got like Santa Claus eyes. That's what I told Peter. He's got like these, they just, you know, if you're new in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, look for people like that. You know, our big book talks about him. He had that starry-eyed look, all right. Robert, you have that. And I love that, and I honor that, and you're my brother. And, you know, Russell today just killed it, you know? He did, like, everything he gave us, you know? I mean, he's a walking big book, man. And if you're new here, here's a secret about Russell. If you're new here and you don't really know the big book, you heard about 20 chapters today. There's not 20 chapters, but you know what I mean? You heard a lot of chapters. At least I do know that. You know, and Mike and Michael, you know, it's like so refreshing. Mike, I love Michael. Michael works at 12-step like nobody I've ever seen. And just see, I never got to hear your story. I never got to hear your story. And it was just, I just like, I'm like pinching myself, like I get to be the girl in between these teachers, and what an honor and what a beautiful thing. And of course, Peter, I just think of Peter as the alcoholic whisperer, no matter, you know, even though I'm partnered to him and I've heard him more than anybody on this planet, something in here shuts off when I hear him and I hear God, and I honor that in you. So now I get to teach him a little bit because I'm here. or whatever's going to come out of my mouth. So a couple of things have been coming to me today because I would throw up and die if I show up here, you know. I'm in nothing of myself. And I'm sure that, yeah. But the significance of 27 years, I can tell you that that number, I just thought of it today. And I was, you know, in between talks and stuff, I got out to pray and sat in the car and got out in the park. And my time with God is sacred and beautiful. And I love that. And I was thinking of 27. And when I was 27 years old, and now I've been 27 years sober, that year was the most horrendous, horrible year of my life when I was 27. And that year in January, well, my son was born, and 3 months and 3 days later, he died of crib death at my sister's house, my fourth child. His name was Brian. And later that same year, my mom died in August of that same year. And I'll tell you, like, my prayer out in this beautiful park today was like, God, look at where you've taken me. Look at where I've come. And that place of brokenness, it was horrific. Horrific. You know, when I say this, when I talk about my first step all the time, but there was this, I went to see this psychologist because I was a drunken housewife, and I just thought I was insane. And this therapist told me, she goes, Marian, when you lose a child, you lose your future, and when you lose a parent, you lose your past. And you're having trouble living in today. And those words, how do I remember that? I was a drunk. You know, it's like maybe those words hit that same place, and I never thought of this until this very second, like the Hank Parkhurst thing, a thought, a word with a voice that hit my spirit. And I love that because it always reminds me of you guys. It always reminds me of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm having trouble living in today. You know, in our big book, you know, that woman took me on a journey, and you know, she could have very well addressed the fact that possibly I was an alcoholic, but that wasn't her job. You know, I wasn't ready for these rooms. I wasn't ready for these rooms till I was ready for these rooms, you know? But I came eventually. And I was thinking about, you know, when we talk about step 10 and, you know, I had a beautiful sponsor that she, her name was Kathy Downs, and she's my first sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she was trying to point me to God. She was, her and her husband were like Danny and Susan today. You know, come on over to our house. We're going to have coffee till 1 o'clock in the morning, and then we're going to play some Monopoly, and, you know, we'll have a burger, and yeah, you can sleep on our couch, and yeah, we'll go pick you up, and, you know, good AA couples, the real deal, you know? And I couldn't get around her. You know, when you're brand new and you see those women that glow in the dark or whatever, and you just go, not happening. Where's, you know, where's the guys, or give me a little validation, or, you know, whatever, you know? And she came up to me after a meeting one day, and she said to me, she goes, so Marian, what are you doing this weekend? And I'm like, I got to go to work, and then I'm going to take the kids to the park, and then I'm going to go to the movie, and then I'm going to go shopping, and then I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. And she said, you know, just a smug, I mean, she was shorter than me. And she looks at me and she goes, well, maybe one of these days you'll slow down long enough for God to be in charge. And I thought with a voice that just hits right here, I want what she has. What do you mean, God? And through my journey, through the steps with this woman, through that journey, she was diagnosed with brain cancer. And I would call her with my little problems, and I stopped calling her with my little problems, and she'd call me like a good old timer, and she'd say, why aren't you calling? Well, Kathy, you're going through chemotherapy, you know, I'm not gonna bug you. Who are you to deny me and my sobriety? Get over here, you know? And she lived out on the Northwest Road. Peters walked that trail out there, and she'd walk me around out in her field, and we'd gather leaves, and she'd tell me her stories of God and take me through the steps, and she'd have me in the house with wax paper, and we'd wax paper these leaves and make these little books, and she was a precious, precious, precious woman. And I walked her through her whole process of her dying. And her children are my children today. Artie Downs, you met him at the wedding. And Liz, she wasn't at the wedding, but nobody knows what wedding we're talking about, my son's wedding. And she's like, take care of them, you know, help take care of them. And her kids are, you know, in their 30s today, and they're good friends with my kids and their family, you know, but what I learned to do in that relationship with her and what I walked out was to grieve somebody clean and sober. You know, I wasn't for Brian. I wasn't for my mom. And that's what, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous and this relationship with God and surrounding ourselves with this healing and going through these steps that we get to, you know, make amends, be able to feel what that really feels like. It sucks and it's hard. And she handed me off to another big book thumper who was like 6 feet tall named Suze. And she was a biker chick and she was bad and in a good way. But somehow, even that relationship with her, I think back on it, there was a tendering thing that happened to her with me. And she helped get me a little tougher, you know, and that was beautiful. So that's the intro. So what I was going to say is, like, in and through the process of the steps and coming into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and absolutely hating everything about me. Everything. I mean, I just hate me. And why not? Because of all my wreckage. And people tell me, we'll love you till you can love yourself. And one of the greatest things is that 10-step to me. And it's something I live by, guys. I have to live by that. Because if I'm out there creating wreckage on a daily basis, if I'm resentful and if I'm dishonest and if I'm living my life that way, guys, I can no longer live in my skin. I can. The day I hit my bottom on November 11th, 1989, which my little brother, who was living under a bridge, who is a heroin addict, another thought with a voice, whatever, another thing that he threw at me was, one of these days, you're going to, because I was busy with my 6 brothers and sisters, always pointing the finger outward to them. And, you know, when are you going to get your crap together? Because, you know, I got a pool, I got a car, I got, you know, I'm going to PTA meetings. Yeah, I might be snockered when I get there, but I'm going, you know, and my outsides, I'm thinking, are looking pretty good. I've just got, you know, the sniffling problem that Michael had earlier. And so I could drink more alcohol. That was what it was all about. High five on that. That was me, you know. And I was so busy looking out here at everybody else. And I was always so busy trying to fix everybody else. And that still can be my tendency. If my family's okay, then I can be okay. If you're okay, then I can be okay. You know, and then if I'm doing something really nice for you, well, you sure as heck, you know, you don't even appreciate it, so that sucks. But it's all hidden. You know, it's all hidden. It's all inside of me. I don't even know what's going on, you know? And so I'm busy pointing the finger outside to this little brother that's going, stealing, okay, this is old, 8-track cassettes, tapes, and 8-tracks out of cars and coming to my house and wanting me to be his pawn shop all the time so he can buy another bag, you know? And it's like, Eric, he's the scapegoat in the family. You know, he's the guy with all the problems. My little sister's popping Valium, drinking wine in the morning. She's crazy. My brothers, you know, they're all, you know, but look at me. I'm okay. And that little brother that was living under the bridge, the heroin addict, he told me one day, he said, one of these days, you're going to take a good, long, hard look in the mirror. And November 11, 1989, in my bright pink bathroom, when I came downstairs and I didn't know that night before in my matted hair and my leopard shirt that I was going to, that was going to be my last day of drinking. You know, I got drunk twice that day, November 10th, my 30th birthday, I got drunk twice. That morning when I came to and I looked in the mirror, I was at that place that it talks about. I was at that jumping off place. I couldn't see my life with a drink. I couldn't see it without it. I don't know, something there. And I believe that day was the first appearance of God in any of the GODs with that gift of desperation. I was given that gift of desperation that day. I reached out to my big sister. I don't remember calling her, but apparently I did, you know, and she took me to treatment. And so how that ties with step 10 is in that process of the steps, you know, in that total hatred for myself, I was able to, in steps, you know, come to believe, you know, admit I'm powerless over alcohol. That day, boom, done, right? Go into treatment, you know, step two, you know, coming to believe that a power greater than myself, all these coincidences started happening in the treatment center. Everything was like, how is this happening? How could people showing up at the right time in the right place? And it's ridiculous. And that could take an hour to explain that, you know, and then turning my will and life and care over the care of God, and then going into the steps with Kathy and doing 4 and 5, and I got the gracious, beautiful experience of being able to share my fifth step with a pastor, Ron Slater, who is one of my heroes today. He's since gone to heaven, and he was a great man of the cloth, and he was a great man of the cloth, and he was there for me and held my hand when my baby died. And he was there when my mom died, and he said, you know, she got God. And I was like, yeah, thank you. And hero. And he loved on my children. He loved on my family. And that same brother, that same guy, you know, I'm ready to do this fifth step. I'm going to do it with my sponsor. And he's like, well, why don't you do it with Pastor Slater, you know? And I was like, yeah, I'll do it, you know? And then I was chickening out. I wasn't going to call him. That wasn't going to happen. And that day he showed up to my house, and I gave him my fifth step, and he gave me considerations. And he did it with lots of AAs, guys. It wasn't just, oh, you're forgiven, daughter. You know, it was like, he got me to the fourth call. And where are you at fault? Not what's everybody else's stuff. And how that applies to 10 is I clean things, you know, that which was separating me from God, all this stuff that was on top, you know, because our chapter to the agnostic talks about, you know, God is deep down within each and every one of us, you know, and I started to be able to be free. I started to be able to look myself in the eye. I started to be able to be okay with Marion, you know, and it was the beginning of that process. And going out and making amends to my family, going out to the people I'd hurt, you know, and taking the bit in the teeth, like it says in the book. And it's just like the most incredible process. And today when I get to 10, and yeah, they say those are our walking around steps. They're so important in my life today, because one thing I know in my sobriety, I've got to be able to look myself in the eye. You know, there's times at night when Peter and I will go to bed and I did something really jerky that day. There's times I've woke him up. Hey, wait a minute. You know, this was wrong, that was wrong, whatever. You know, because I've learned that that place of to myself to be true, to keep my side of the street clean. You know, how my alcoholism can affect me today. I had this situation just a couple weeks ago with my big sister. You know, she can bully, and she can, I love you, Marlene. You know, I can, there's stuff that can happen with that, you know? And I was homesick, I'm in bed, and Peter was gone for the weekend, and there was this offense she did on social media, and the way I took it, other people could perceive, and we have a perception problem, right? And how I had perceived this was, it was a direct jab at me. And I was sick at home, and I was tired, and I was mad, like really, really mad. Peter called. He's like, he knew I was twisted up, but I'm not going on with it, because he was far away. And I'm just like all by myself, you know, for like 24 hours, just letting that stew and build and build and build inside of me, you know. And you know what? Rather than like use my sponsor, you know, she loves it when I call her when I've got an offense. She's go, Mary, just call me first. Just call me first. I don't care what it is. I don't have any attachment to the outcome. I don't have any attachment to what you have to say. And she can point me in the right direction. So what happened through this was I did the wrong thing. You know, I called her. Oh, no, actually, I didn't. I brought somebody else into the situation. First off. Somebody else who was like, oh, yeah, that's bad. That's really, really bad. How did she do that? You know, I got somebody on my side. And then I got somebody else on my side. And she got somebody on her side, with us on our side. So there was my 1, 2, 3 other people involved in this drive-by shooting I involve people in. Why? Because I didn't talk to my sponsor. Why? Because I hadn't looked at my side of the street. All this, right? And it was going on. I had a couple conversations with my big sister, and she was like, she was broken. She was like, I'm sorry. I didn't even see it that way. It's like, all right, okay, I love you. I love you too. Okay, we love each other. Okay. I'm not kidding you. It took a while. It was a week. You know, we think those things go away. And I can tell you what happened. I was doing a step series down in Hollywood. And I'm driving. I'm going to listen to Joe Hawk. Don't ever listen to that guy if you want to get more truth serum. And he was talking about how he, his fiance had broke up with him, and he got all these people rallied alongside of him. And I'm listening to this. It just happened to be in my CD player, just happened to be at that moment. And I'm going to go down to this place and talk about step six, you know, doing some inventory. Well, let's go talk to, you know, do our super spiritual Marian AA talk down in Hollywood. I'm going to go do this freaking talk. And I'm driving down there, and all of a sudden, listening to a little bit of this Joe Hawk thing's going on, and I was like, oh, God. Where am I at fault? Where was I dishonest? Where was I selfish? And this is 2 weeks later. This was in, but I had no idea. But God revealed it at the right moment, at the right time. And I had to go to that meeting, you know, and it was crazy because, you know, I'd had a series of events happening. I got to go to New Jersey and do this, and it was just a beautiful, beautiful event. And I what I realized I started turning into was Super Marian, you know, like, oh yeah, now you're an AA speaker, and you know, like, whoa, people call you, and so we got to listen to these great speakers and get a little more information and read your big book a little more, because then Super Marian can show up for this talk. And I got to the meeting, and God hijacked the whole meeting, and it was like, you know, I got this inventory to share about my sister, and this sucks. This really sucks. And what was cool about it is they walked through the whole thing with me. I was like, here's the resentment, here's the cause. They go, and I'm like, are you guys mad? And they're like, yeah. I said, we can't stay. They were mad with it. They go, oh, no, 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 no. No, we're not staying there. Now we're going to the third column. Now we're going to the fourth. And now I'm going to go make that amends. And what that has to do with step 10 is about, where am I clean? Where am I right with God? Where am I right with God? Continue to take inventory. And when we are wrong, promptly admitting it. And oh, when you've been sober a long time, that really, really, really sucks. God, why can't I keep my mouth shut when that happened? You know, it doesn't happen very often today, and I'm really, really grateful for that. But when it does, when you got a, hi, sis. Yeah? Well, that sucked. Okay. You know, what can I do to make it right? Well, what can I do to make it right? And it was beautiful, you know, and there's, you know, more details with that. And then, calling the people that I involved in the drive-by. You know? Hey, you know, that really sucked. You know, that was my perception. We have a perception problem, right? And so it's beautiful. So even though it sucks to go back and do that stuff, at the same time, I can't afford to live with that stuff. Because those are the very things that separate me from my God. Those are the things that separate us from God. Where was I going here? When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful in that situation? I was selfish, dishonest, or afraid. Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should have been discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Where were we thinking of ourselves, or were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others? Of what we could do to pack into the mainstream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. Because the way that used to be, if I did something wrong, that's exactly where I went. To worry, remorse, morbid reflection. I suck. I did something wrong. This is really, oh, poor me, you know? And if I'm selfish and I'm self-centered to my core, then that can be when I'm all happy and I want this and I want that, but I'm selfish and I'm self-centered when I'm drifting into worry, remorse, and morbid reflection. I'm still being selfish because then all I'm doing is I'm thinking about me. So I have I think that nightly review and inventory is the key to world peace. You know, as the hippie chick that I am, you know, I seriously, for me, I've been working a lot with, I'm taking the steps in a different area in my life, and inventory and self-appraisal has been really, really important to me. You know, when I'm disturbed, and my sponsor always says, when we're angry and we're pointing the finger out here, all it is when I'm angry at somebody else is you're not doing what I want you to do. If you're not doing what I want you to do, then I'm busy playing God. And I guess, and when I say that about world peace or whatever, if you're not doing what I want you, it's not my business. It's not my business. You know, if I'm busy in this place and I'm doing the best work I can do to ratify, oh, I was selfish, oh, I was dishonest, oh, I was afraid. If I'm looking at, you know, my side of the street and what I can do better, you know, I'm going to be taking my hands off of where I think that God should be working in your life, for God's sake. And so, you know, Peter talks about, you know, wearing the world as a loose garment, you know, and these are the steps that help us to do that, you know, to let go of things and go, you know what? And this is crazy. A long, long road for me in my sobriety. You know, I was raised really poor, dirty little girl. Nobody came to my house. I was ashamed of everything in my life. I wore shame like a heavy wool blanket. That's who I was. And I can tell you today, because of inventory, I don't have to do that today. You know, I don't have to know what's best for anybody else, and I can clean my side of the street. And you know what? I can have things like I can be what? Happy, joyous, and free. And, you know, and time again, that's part of my trouble a year ago was people weren't doing what I wanted them to do. And I would wear that rather than release that to God. That I'm quoting the big book and here's Mary and I'm so spiritual and I love God so much, but I'm playing God at the exact same time. It's crazy. So, where did I want to go here? This is so cool. Some promises of step 10. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone. Even alcohol. What? For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it like a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on any part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. That's how it says it. That's the miracle of it. Right, Michael? We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That's our experience. That is how we react as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. So, just jumping down, here's a warning to old timers. Here's a warning to all of us. Here's a warning to any of us. It's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. I've rested I'm sick, I'm in bed, poor me, boom. Sister, social media, bad. We're headed for trouble if we do. For alcohol is a subtle fool. That's the deal. Alcohol is a subtle fool. I might have a living problem, but alcohol is a subtle fool. It's a subtle fool. We're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry out the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will be done, not mine. These are thoughts that which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our will power along this line all we wish. It's the proper use of the will. And it's kind of fun. I love what Mike was talking about today, you know, him and God. God's my buddy. We hang out, you know. And Peter's kind of like that too, and I love it. He's like, okay, God, what am I going to wear? Okay, God, what am I going to eat? Okay, God. You know, God's my best friend today. And there's different ways that I practice my contact with him. And I was talking about this Thursday, you know, I love the great outdoors, G-O-D, great outdoors, even if that's getting little peace for you coming in here. It is about God. You know, if there's a heart-shaped cloud or a feather or a rock that I love or whatever, it's like at the perfect time, at the perfect moment, and I know it's just right straight from God. And Susan's totally into that too. I love it. She'll find a rock that's heart-shaped and, you know, take a picture of it and send it to me. Look, it's God, you know. And I love that, you know. And that's what my God is to me today. Like, I talk to guys that I work with all the time. God's like got us on this scavenger hunt to know him. Like, I believe that's who we are in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's always the great mysteries of God. He loves when our thoughts are turned towards him. He loves to turn us. He thinks of us more than every hair on our head, every cell of our body, thinking of us today. Why does he do that for alcoholics? The old timers used to tell me, because we're really fun to watch. And I think we're really fun to watch when we're out there. He takes care of me. And I mean, who doesn't know God? Okay, I don't know how many countless situations that I came to in my living room and it was like, wow, how did I get here? There's no guts on the grill of the car. You know, things like that. Like, God got me through this and that, and yet we come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and we want to be skeptical about this God of our understanding. Are you kidding me? You know? I'm not always great at putting that inventory pen to paper. Not always great at it. I try to use that throughout my day. Absolutely. I try to use that step 10. But when it comes to step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God as I understand him. The things I did in my early sobriety are not the things I do today. You know, God started revealing himself through coincidences, through things happening in my life, and I knew he was there for me. You know, things were just rolling, things were happening, and it was just so beautiful. It's like this continuous story. It's like, I have a deep meditation work I do called Ascension, and I'm now a Catholic, and I'm a Pentecostal Catholic. I don't know. I just love God, you know, but I cannot rest on my laurels. If I rest on my laurels, I'm in bed, I'm sick, and I'm going after my sister. You know what I mean? And so. That's what I have to say about that. And through all those things, you know, it's like as this relationship's unfolded, you know, there's miracle after miracle after miracle that happened in my life. You know, God brings a guy from Brooklyn, New York to Bellingham, Washington. You know, how does that happen? How do I end up in Stuart, Florida with you guys? How do I get to sponsor a lot of women? How do I get to do this life that I get to do? You know, it is only by God's grace, it's only by his mercy, and it's only by, I'm sober because of God, and because I'm sober because of God, I get to do this work with other people. I get to help bring other people to that place of peace with God. And I really have no idea how long I'm supposed to go, but I'm feeling like this is the place where I'm supposed to end. So I'm going to do that right now. Thank you all for my medallions and the cake. Yeah. Let's have cake. Let's have cake.